day, everyone, and welcome to the Families USA Continuous Coverage Provisions Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Annette Rubinow, Director of Media Relations for Family USA. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Cortez, and thanks for all the participants on the Protect Our Care Coalition Informational Media Teleconference Series. This is our fifth of seven calls where we hope that you'll be able to understand better Congress's different proposals in the attempt to dismantle the progress the Affordable Care Act has made. These calls are taking place every Tuesday and Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until next Thursday, March 23rd, which happens to coincide with the ACA's seventh anniversary. Each call will discuss different topics as stated in the media advisory. Today's teleconference will discuss how the Republican proposal of continuous coverage penalizes individuals by allowing insurance companies to discriminate and or charge more for not having continuous coverage. Our experts today is Elizabeth Hagan from Families USA, Stephanie Glover from the National Partnership for Women and Families, and Kim Hall Jackson, representing the National Coalition of Cancer Survivorship, a colon cancer survivor herself. Now, we'll start with Elizabeth Hagan, the Associate Director of Coverage Initiatives at Families USA.
Thank you so much, Annette, and thank you, everyone, for joining what I think is a very important and timely topic. I wanted first to start by setting the stage, given that there's been some recent news this week and even today related to continuous coverage, but more broadly, the American Health Care Act. The GOP bill being debated today does have some components of the continuous coverage provision, but I also wanted to speak more broadly to the idea beyond just the bill, because there are a number of different ways that continuous coverage provisions can be designed. This week, of course, we saw the CBO score out that looked at the number of uninsured people that would be left without coverage due to the American Health Care Act. And today we saw that the American Health Care Act passed the Budget Committee and will be moving to the floor. So I wanted first to provide some background on the need and the rationale for a mandate of some sort. And first, I think the most important thing is to not be fooled, because the Republicans have looked at ways to replace the individual mandate with the so-called continuous coverage provisions, which are really a mandate that go by another name. And there's some need to have some way within health insurance to bring healthy people into the market and to bring a balanced risk pool. And there's been wide consensus about that. There's been even acknowledgement of the need for some type of mandate by conservative organizations such as the Heritage Foundation in the 1990s healthcare reform debate. So there is some need for a mandate of some sort to bring healthy people in. The term continuous coverage may sound harmless, but it actually does mean that insurance companies can discriminate and charge more when people do seek coverage, essentially locking people out of coverage when they can't afford it. This could happen if people let their insurance lapse for even just a few months. Unlike the current individual mandate that penalizes people for not having coverage, continuous coverage provisions instead penalize people when they do decide to get coverage. This will encourage many from signing up at all. This requirement is actually a mandate, but with a much harsher and longer-lasting penalty that could very heavily fall on those with health problems, unstable employment, and limited income, for example. Following my section, Stephanie is going to talk about some of the reasons that people might go without coverage and what some of the harm they would face. This is one area that voters and people do not support, as recently found by focus groups by Periundum. There are a number of ways that continuous coverage provisions can work, and I want to talk briefly about some of those ways before talking specifically about the House bill, the components of continuous coverage provisions within that. Continuous coverage provisions can be set up in a way that allow plans to charge more for people who had gaps in coverage if they have pre-existing conditions, which, of course, bellies in the GOP promise of protecting those with pre-existing conditions. Plans could be allowed to limit what services they cover for people with pre-existing conditions, or other plans such as the American Health Care Act and proposals would allow there to be premium surcharges for those who go without coverage for a certain length of time. That amount of time could differ in different plans, or the amount that the surcharge is charged could differ as well, from 10%, 20%, 30%, or even more. Other versions of continuous coverage provisions could require people to have had coverage for specific lengths of time, such as 12 months or 18 months prior to enrolling before they institute any of these rules. Some would institute wait lists rather than a surcharge that would lock people out of coverage for a certain amount of time, such as 6 months or a year. And other ways this could be designed would grant exemptions for people that have certain situations like the individual mandate now does now. It's important to remember, too, that many won't know about the rules until they enroll. And even for some that do know about these rules, they might not be able to act on it, either because they can't afford to or because they have knowledge gaps and limited understanding of the consequences. The bottom line is this. All of these provisions would harm people in just in different ways. I want to now talk about the most recent and perhaps the most recent and relevant version that's being looked at right now in the American Healthcare Act and the negative effects it would cause. The American Healthcare Act includes a continuous coverage provision that would require individuals to have coverage for a year or pay a 30% premium surcharge when they do enroll. The surcharge would last for an individual for one full year under this proposal, so 30% more each month that they are enrolled. So despite talk of eliminating government-mandated health care, the ACHA does have a mandate. The penalty would affect anyone who was uninsured for more than 63 days within the past full year. So what would this mean? This would not incentivize people to maintain coverage. It would hurt market stability and increase premiums for everyone who is already insured, and sick people who have more incentive to pay for health insurance would be the ones that are most likely to enroll and pay more. It would only make it harder to attract new young, healthy people into the insurance market who are needed to balance the risk pool. This week, we saw recent findings from CBO that show the effect of these provisions. The CBO finds that people who don't enroll will largely be healthier individuals. Those that are needed to balance the risk pool, they would be the ones that are most unwilling to pay the premium surcharge. This provision was included in the bill to encourage young, healthy people to sign up for health insurance, but the CBO found that this, in fact, would do the opposite, that the people who would be deterred from enrolling would be healthier than those who would actually sign up. The CBO found that in 2018 alone, 14 million people fewer would be insured, and that most of this increase would stem from repealing the penalties associated with the individual mandate. CBO expects that the number of insured would decrease in 2019 and beyond just due to this continuous coverage provision. They found that 2 million people fewer would have insurance because of this. It's not just the mandate that's going away that contributes to the sharp increase in the number of uninsured. The CBO expects that the large number of these people would be forced to go without coverage due to higher costs through higher premiums and because of the continuous coverage premium surcharge. So those people that would otherwise purchase insurance would not because it's unaffordable. These provisions will do nothing to counteract the loss of coverage due to the repeal of the ACA's individual mandate, and they will further erode coverage in the long run by deterring individuals from enrolling. I want to also note one big outstanding question of the GOP efforts right now. It is not at all clear whether the continuous coverage provisions as written would be able to be included in the bill because of the reconciliation rules that exist. Reconciliation rules require that provisions have a direct impact on the federal budget, and the way that the continuous coverage provisions are designed now don't appear to because the surcharges go straight to insurance companies. So we have yet to see whether the Senate parliamentarian will even let this pass muster. And it is a significant question because it's a significant part of the bill. I'm now going to turn it back to Annette to introduce our next speaker.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Our next speaker is Stephanie Glover, Senior Health Policy Analyst at the National Partnership for Women and Families. Stephanie?
Thank you, Annette, and thank you, Elizabeth, and thanks, everybody on the line. Just to build on what Elizabeth laid out, studies show that tens of millions of people experience short lapses in coverage. So, for example, the Commonwealth Foundation just found that 40 million adults ages 19 to 64 experienced a gap in their health coverage in 2016. So among this group with a gap in insurance, 75%, and that's about 30 million people, had been uninsured for longer than 3 months, which is slightly longer than the 63-day gap that is allowed under the current House bill. So what does this mean for real people? What this means under the current bill is that a 30-year-old woman with a gap in coverage of longer than 63 days in the past 12 months would face a surcharge of $84 per month for the next 12 months, and that would add up to a total of $1,007. The penalty gets steeper as premiums rise for older individuals. So a 15-year-old with a gap in coverage of the same length would be charged $96 more than a younger person per month. And so that's $1,154 over 12 months. That's the difference, for a total of $2,161. So this is a significant charge, additional charge that that many would face if they have this gap in coverage. And many people have, as I noted, many people have a gap in coverage, and that reason can be for a variety of things. It can be due to job changes, life transitions, such as leaving a job to start school or getting married, or it might be because of a period of financial difficulty, such as a loss of job or just a drop in income, which makes it harder to afford coverage. We know that low-income individuals are more at risk of having gaps in coverage and also churning between Medicaid and Marketplace coverage, as their income may be more variable or seasonal or just changing over the course of a given year. Additionally, individuals may not be aware when they're dropping in and out of coverage, and it can be challenging to navigate other and new insurance options. Moreover, cost remains a significant barrier for coverage, and this bill will only make that harder for many individuals, as the numbers I laid out earlier show. So when faced with high premiums and or high cost sharing, consumers may choose to forego health coverage for other more immediate needs, such as housing, food, and transportation. So for women specifically, we believe this trade-off between coverage and immediate needs, such as housing and food, will be particularly challenging to overcome. Research shows that women routinely face financial barriers to affording care, and in fact, unmet health care needs due to cost are significantly more common among women than among men. Additionally, women are commonly family caregivers, which may pull them out of the workforce, thereby exposing them to gaps in coverage because of financial hardship due to lost income or lost employer-sponsored insurance. So ultimately, this bill punishes those who experience a gap in health insurance but want to obtain coverage by forcing them to pay this 30% premium surcharge to their insurer. This creates new and, for many, insurmountable financial barriers to getting the coverage and the care they need. The premium surcharge really is a penalty that would be a huge hardship for women and families already struggling to make ends meet. For women who we know make less money due to persistent wage gaps, the premium surcharge just adds another financial challenge to providing for their families. And Annette, I'll hand it back to you now to introduce our next speaker.
Thank you, Stephanie. And our final speaker is Kim Hall Jackson, representing the National Coalition for Cancer Survivorship, a colon cancer survivor herself. Kim?
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to be here. So when I was diagnosed with cancer, I thought that the most consuming part of this diagnosis would be for me fighting to get better. I had no idea that treating my cancer would result in the loss of my job, subsequently the loss of health care, and my sense of normalcy. Well into my treatment, my supervisor at work began to ask a lot of questions about the frequency of my appointments and post-treatment appointments. And just to give you guys some background, I was initially a stage one colorectal cancer diagnosed, and then after surgery, I was restaged to three. My job did provide reasonable accommodations while I had surgery, chemo, radiation, and chemo again. But my doctors, my surgeon, my oncologist, they were vigilant about my cancer survivorship. That vigilance included regular monitoring, regular blood work, scans, and colonoscopy. After a year of dealing with my employer's skepticism and insensitive to my needs as someone living with cancer, I learned that my position was eliminated. I found myself without a job and unable to afford the outrageous premiums that were offered through COBRA, which amounted to three times more than what I was paying while I was employed. I was turned down by several other insurance companies because back then, insurers could deny coverage due to pre-existing conditions. As a cancer survivor, I was not the customer that they wanted. I had no choice but to go without health care insurance. which meant living day to day with the fear that a recurrence of cancer would bankrupt my family. I was prescribed medications to address the long-term effects of my treatment, but I could not afford the $300 a month price tag to maintain those prescriptions. So I would cut my medications in half and even skip them altogether. When I didn't take my medication as prescribed, it led to painful results. That was until I actually signed up for the Affordable Care Act and it was passed. After that, my husband and I were able to purchase a plan and in exchange using ACA subsidies, we were able to obtain affordable and quality health insurance. We have been pleased with our ACA plan, and in fact, our premiums have gone down since we signed up. When we signed up originally, it was $248 a month. We are currently at $110 a month. The best part of this is that I was able to keep my surgeon, my oncologist, and my primary doctor. This is so crucial and so important to keep the doctors to have a history of what I was experiencing during cancer and my cancer treatment. I now have my own event planning company, and the ACA has allowed me to continue long-term monitoring, follow-up appointments, without worrying if these things could bankrupt me and my family. I have most of my health back, and I have my life back, thanks to the ACA. But if the ACA is repealed, so many others like myself will not be able to afford insurance or have access to health care that is critical to their survival. The American Health Care Act, a replacement proposal being considered by in Congress right now, would cut subsidies for individuals to pay for health insurance and would allow older adults to be charged five times the amount as younger individuals. The AHCA would also allow insurers to charge an additional 30% of the premium penalty to those who do not retain continuous coverage. If this law had been in place back when I went a year without coverage because I could not afford COBRA after losing my job, I would not have been able to get health care insurance at all. I can assure you that anyone who has experienced cancer knows full well the need for health insurance and that they will enroll in insurance if they can afford it. This penalty would hurt the most vulnerable patients. The most vulnerable and patients deserve better. Cancer survivors like myself should not have to decide between paying mortgage for food or filling a prescription or getting necessary treatment. The ACA has made incredible strides in protecting Americans, and we cannot afford to go backwards. My experience illustrates so many reasons why the ACA is critical to cancer survivors. I know what it's like not to have access to health care and insurance, and I will continue to advocate to protect our care so that no one else goes through what I experienced. Thank you.
All right, so at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. If you've seen that your question has been answered, you may withdraw yourself by pressing the pound key. Once again, that's star and one to ask a question, and we'll pause a few moments to allow questions to queue. And once again, that's star and one. And it appears we'll go first to Jan Spansley with the Serengeti's for Health Coverage. Please go ahead.
Hi. I'm so sorry if I missed this. I had a lot of trouble getting in. I had the wrong number. So the question I have is if you covered it, I'm sorry, is the exceptions, I mean, like how much time people really do have, and exceptions to the continuous coverage rule. And I'll give an example. We have a lot of people that get reinstated within a few months into Medi-Cal, and they're allowed to be reinstated. And I'm hoping that doesn't go away as long as if this is at a discontinued at the renewal time. And then also, sometimes just through no fault of their own, they lose coverage. Like if they hand the paycheck, goodbye, we're gone, and there's no way to get coverage the next day. So I'm looking for exceptions to the rule.
Sure. This is Liz Hagan with Families USA. I want to touch on a couple different things there because you touched on a couple different components. The first is that The version of the continuous coverage that we're looking at with the American Health Care Act is one way to do continuous coverage, but there are a number of other ways. So I'll talk about the way that the American Health Care Act looks now. People would have to have had coverage for the full prior year. Any time over 63 days without coverage, they would be charged a 30% premium surcharge every month for their enrollment. So basically, if they've went without coverage for more than 2 months, they would be considered, they would have to pay that 30% premium surcharge. Other versions of continuous coverage could require people to have had coverage for 18 months, as was in now Secretary Price's plan, or they could have it for even longer. So while we're looking at the American Health Care Act specifically for this, we know that this is just the beginning of the process, and the Senate will have different versions likely of a lot of different aspects of this, so we're not quite sure that this will be what it is finally. And then on the exceptions piece, we haven't seen anything so far that has any exemptions. If you recall the individual mandate, now certain people do not have to pay the fee for not having coverage, which are known typically as hardship exemptions if their income's too low or if they have extenuating circumstances or if their plans are unaffordable. And we haven't yet seen what those exemptions, if any, would be under the Republican replacement plan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Next we'll go to Anthony Morano with KRWG Public Media. Please go ahead.
All right. I have a question regarding continuous coverage. I mean, I know there's sort of one of the popular things about the ACA was that insurers couldn't deny people with pre-existing conditions. Could you kind of go into an explanation about how with the American Health Care Act that that could be a new possibility? What are the things that continuous coverage could be challenged here? I should probably explain that a little bit better.
I think I understand the question, and I can take the first stab at it, but I would imagine Stephanie will want to jump in as well. I mean, I think you heard very clearly from Kim's very personal story that she, with a pre-existing condition, would be affected by continuous coverage provisions because she had cancer, which led to job loss, which led to her losing coverage and not having affordable options. Under the American Health Care Act, subsidies would be much less generous, and it would be very difficult to obtain coverage. But she would also face perhaps a 30% premium increase in getting enrolled in coverage in the first place, even with the unaffordable options and the premium surcharge added together. Someone in her situation would be significantly harmed. And as Stephanie mentioned, a lot of people go without coverage for a number of reasons, whether they have a pre-existing condition and lose their job and lose coverage, or a number of other reasons. So that's one piece. But then more broadly, pre-existing condition people with pre-existing conditions could be harmed if they were to change the way that the continuous coverage provisions are laid out in a future bill. So they could make it so that if people went without coverage for a certain amount of time, health insurance companies could decide that they deny them for having coverage, or they deny certain services for people that go without coverage. So like I said, there's a number of different ways that these can be designed.
You mentioned subsidies. Could you explain a little bit about how subsidies could become less generous?
Yeah, so in the American Health Care Act, subsidies are based on an individual's age as opposed to the current way that they're designed, which is based on someone's income. And so for older Americans and lower income Americans in particular, the subsidies would be much less generous. If you take the example of a 64-year-old currently in the ACA versus the American Health Care Act, they would pay about $13,000 more per year for coverage. And so the subsidies based on age, the older, there's a 2-to-1 ratio, so the older Americans would get twice as much as the lower aged Americans, and so the subsidies would be much less generous, and you would be getting much less generous plans, so you'd be paying more for less, essentially.
Okay, thank you.
I don't know if Stephanie has anything to add to that, or Kim even.
Yeah, this is Stephanie. I'll add on to that really quickly. Thanks for the question. You know, to be clear, in this bill, it's the current American Healthcare bill, it is the straight 30% premium surcharge, but as Liz indicated, in past proposals and ways of designing continuous coverage provisions, we have seen that people with pre-existing conditions could be charged more, denied coverage based on that, and for women in particular, that's a pretty serious concern because before the ACA, women were denied coverage or charged more based on how insurance companies defined pre-existing conditions to include things like pregnancy, cesarean section, treatment for domestic violence, and other chronic conditions that women may experience. So, again, you know, I set that a little bit aside as that's not in this current bill, but it's certainly something that could emerge as healthcare reform continues to be discussed and repealing the ACA continues in Congress. So hopefully that answers your question as well.
Okay. Is it okay if I get one more question?
I think that's fine. Yeah.
One of the problems with the ACA was that it was having trouble enrolling younger, healthier people. Do you feel, in your opinion, that this, you know, current bill is going to, you know, end up with a lot less younger, healthier people enrolling in healthcare?
Well, this is Liz. I'll take a first stab at that as well. The CBO just this week found that the continuous coverage provisions would lead to healthier and younger people not enrolling in coverage. And while we certainly want to bring a diverse risk pool in, young and healthy people help make it more affordable for everyone. And if you saw yesterday the enrollment report for the Affordable Care Act's fourth open enrollment period, you saw that I think it's around 36% of enrollees were between the ages of 0 and 34. And so that's, you know, bringing young and healthy people in, and we want to make sure that we're encouraging them to do this. By young and healthy, by definition, are more likely to go without insurance, and when they do need insurance, charging them 30% more is going to deter them from enrolling at all.
Thank you.
And once again, for those who just joined, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone, and we'll pause a few moments to allow any further questions to queue. Okay, and it appears that we have no further questions at this time. I'll turn the conference back over to our presenters for any closing remarks.
Thank you very much, Cortez, and thanks, everybody, for participating. Remember, there was two more calls coming up. So if you need more information, please go to familiesusa.org and go to our press room so you would be able to be put on the media list. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for all the participants. Kim, thank you so much for your story. And thanks, and have a good day.
Thank you.
And that will conclude today's conference, and you may disconnect at any time.